There's a siren screaming in my ear. Election days are colder when pushing from the rear is fear, fearing fear, fearing fear.
Hello, this is Blaise Bonpain with World Focus, coming to you from KPFK Los Angeles. We are now podcast, and this program is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at kpfk.org, where it can also be heard internationally. My guest today is Dr. Thomas Heck, an independent scholar who is the originator of a proposal for the Holy Land Protectorate. At this particular time of year, looking for peace on earth, we might ask you, Dr. Heck, how can we change the situation there, which has been so static for so long?
Well, you're right that it has been static. I basically, as a musician, among other things, I tend sometimes to invert realities to see what they look like from the other angle. In the case of the Israel-Palestine dispute, I began thinking of, well, what would happen if the world had a chance to weigh in on this instead of just the principal parties? In other words, if we ask the world, what do you want for the Holy Land? I'm sure that there would be an overwhelming chorus, peace on earth.
Well, this was done in the case of a very sparsely populated area known as Antarctica, which has a treaty saying it shall be used for peaceful purposes only. There shall be prohibited any measure of a military nature, etc. So you have taken the Antarctic Treaty and projected that onto the Israeli-Palestine issue?
Well, that's exactly what I did. It occurred to me that the Antarctic Treaty, which was crafted in 1959, was a brilliant example of how to skirt an issue of sovereignty claims and still have a peaceful outcome. Well, of course, the way it was done was, you know, there were originally 7 claimants to Antarctic territory. They were Argentina, Australia, Chile, France, New Zealand, Norway, and the UK. And they hadn't yet come to blows or to starting, you know, violent warfare over whose chunk of Antarctica belonged to whom. But there were overlapping claims. And it reminds one of a situation like what we see in the Middle East. And the way this problem was resolved, and it's amazing because it was resolved at the height of the Cold War in 1959, with the cooperation of the USSR and the United States and 3 other countries, South Africa, Japan, and Belgium. So what you had was basically the 7 claimants and 5 other significant countries coming together around a table and ironing out an agreement. And the interesting thing about the agreement is that it suspends what you would call recognition of statehood, of nation statehood, in the entire territory of Antarctica, which is 500 times as large as the Holy Land, and it suspends that recognition for the duration of the treaty.
Well, now, to project this onto the establishment of the Holy Land Protectorate, you're dealing with a very highly populated area. Gaza is one of the most highly populated areas on Earth. But the principle of mediation is here that the view has to be taken from the outside rather than from the inside. Is that the way you're seeing it?
Well, I see it that way. I'd like to point out that I'm certainly not the only one who sees it that way. You know, if you look at the most recent diplomatic effort by what's called the Quartet to find a solution to that area, you'll soon realize that the Quartet consists of 4 entities not at all equal and really incapable of making sweet music together, but still 4 entities, none of which is Israel or Palestine. The one is the United Nations as a group. The second is Russia. The third is the European Union, and the fourth is the United States.
And those taken together would give Articles 2 of the Holy Land Protectorate Treaty the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and movement. This would be something like a First Amendment for the area. The Holy Land Protectorate shall be guaranteed to all residents and all visitors.
Okay. You may be reading from my website, which is holylandprotectorate.org.
Yes.
I was talking in more general terms about the fact that what I recommend in my Holy Land Protectorate draft treaty is a novel but forceful diplomatic solution imposed from without. In other words, what I'm saying, and I'm not the only one, what I'm saying is that you have like two kids playing in a sandbox and they can't get along and they're throwing sand at each other. And then you have parents standing around saying, wait a second, don't behave this way. And generally the way the peace in the sandbox is restored is by the parents coming in and grabbing the children and saying, I know you think you're here first. I know you think you own this. It doesn't matter. We want peace in the sandbox. You can't do that.
Well, we had UN General Assembly Resolution 181 that pertained to the city of Jerusalem, which was to be an independent city administered by the UN. Now, that was not carried out, but your perspective is larger than that. Your perspective would include all of existing Palestine and Israel. Is that correct?
That's right. That UN resolution, I believe it was 1947, calling for a corpus separatum, a kind of a separate entity for Jerusalem, was at least an early recognition that the Holy Land is more than a place that one country can or should own. It's, in my way of thinking, and I think I'm not the only one, but I believe that the Holy Land is the premier world heritage site.
Well, we hear the phrase sometimes post-Zionist in Israel today. We hear that phrase. You're calling for a statehood free status for all present-day Israel and Palestine, so that and that would be comparable with the Antarctica situation, thereby giving these people a world citizenship with UN passports. Now, that would be quite a special thing for anyone to have, right?
It would be quite a coup if the United Nations could organize itself to the point of being able to play ball in that park. But you're right that, you know, what I'm asking is that the present-day inhabitants of Palestine and Israel accept a new status, which is not being citizens of Israel or citizens of Palestine as old nation-states in the old concept, but rather being world citizens with UN passports that say, I am a world citizen and a resident of the Holy Land.
Well, that would be the beginning of something that would be great for the future for the globe, because this whole old concept of the nation state is rather worn out, I think. You're calling for the removal of all related walls and barriers, the freedom of movement, freedom of religion, freedom of association, equal rights for all residents, international arbitration and settlement of all disputed personal property claims. That's
right.
Quite a bit.
Well, yes, it is quite a bit. It's like a whole new ballgame. It's taking the situation to a higher level. I think if you enter my website, you'll notice the very first quote I have is that one from Buckminster Fuller that says, in order to change something, don't struggle to change the existing model. Create a new model and make the old one obsolete.
Well, that's Einstein. I mean, he felt that we were dying from a lack of creativity, a lack of imagination, and I can't imagine anything that's been more static than that relationship between those two entities in the Middle East. I mean, there's been nothing done on the part of the United States for 6 years. Jimmy Carter's new book is quite significant in bringing this out, and I was very pleased to see Rabbi Michael Lerner praising the book and saying that he's the only president to have actually delivered for the Jewish people an agreement, a peace treaty between Israel and Egypt that stood the test of time. And that is quite a statement, that he got together Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat, and it worked. So what he's saying is, why don't you listen to what Jimmy is saying in Palestine, peace, not apartheid.
Yeah.
Very
important. Of course,
important.
Now, I think I should point out to your listeners that the Carter key requirements that he discusses in his book don't go as far as mine do. I mean, his first key requirement is the security of Israel must be guaranteed. I would enlarge that. I would say the security of all Jews in the Holy Land must be guaranteed, and the security of all Christians and all Muslims.
Well, that would seem to make sense. Yeah. It's
an enlargement of the Carter Plan. The next one would be, he calls for the internal debate within Israel must be resolved in order to define Israel's permanent legal boundary. But my recommendation goes one beyond that. It leapfrogs the question of Israel's permanent legal boundary and says a regional settlement will do away with these previous lines in the sand.
Well, I see your statement. The human community is acutely aware of the sufferings of the Jewish people and is determined not to let persecution of the Jews determine again. It is likewise well aware of the unjust expropriation of lands formerly belonging to Palestinian residents,
yes,
of their general oppression and the marginalization in the region and the terrible violence committed by each side against the other in their name and deeply felt in long-term irreconcilable, etc. All of these issues, I think, have to be dealt with, and I do believe it requires someone looking at it from the outside, because internally it seems to have frozen in many ways.
I think you're right. It's like my little metaphor of the kids in a sandbox, that, you know, they get so absorbed in carving out their turf that they don't realize how badly they're behaving. You know, there's an interesting survey that's pointed out in Carter's recent book. It has to do with the International Herald Tribune survey of 7,500 citizens in 15 European countries to ask them, and this was done in October of 2003, what country is the greatest threat to world peace? And it was unanimous that Israel is the greatest threat to world peace, ahead of North Korea, Iran, or Afghanistan. And that by a majority of the residents of the European community. And what I'm suggesting here is that what can be given can be taken away. The history of Israel, to those who study it, is an example of what was granted in 1948 by some countries, that is to say, a recognition of statehood. And that granting process has never run full course. If you visit, for instance, the Israel Ministry of Foreign Affairs website, you will see that today 84% of the world's countries recognize Israel as a state. That means 16% don't. And of those 84%, I mean, of those countries of the world, only 58% have diplomatic missions in Israel. What this is telling me is that the creation of the state of Israel as a nation state, and it's one of the last ones, I mean, 1948, goodness, that fact was not well received initially and is still not being well received by many, many countries. And when you add to it the fact that many people are saying this entity, this nation state in this locality is the most serious threat to world peace, I think we have to pay attention.
Well, I think it's going to be necessary for our listeners to actually go to the website holylandprotectorate.org and to see all of the details involved here, because as anyone might imagine, any new and creative idea has got to be spelled out with a great deal of specificity. I mean, Article 4, the governance, the structures of the Holy Land, the administration under the auspices of signatories acting within the framework of the UN. All of that is spelled out in detail, and I think it might be a model for the evolution of nation states.
Well, I think you have a good point. I mean, it could even be seen by some countries as a threat, because imagine, for instance, if the people of Tibet say, well, you know, we live in a World Heritage Site too, and we would like to have a protectorate here in which everyone, Chinese and Tibetan, can be treated equally.
Well, I think it would be a step forward.
I think it would, too. And then you'd go to Kashmir, and you'd say the same. You know, they would say, well, look, this is a beautiful Isle of Enchantment. This is a World Heritage Site. This, you can't fight. You can't have India and Pakistan fighting over this place. They both have to agree to suspend claims of national sovereignty for the duration of the Kashmir Treaty. You know, and we revisit the treaty after 30 years or whatever.
I'd like our listeners to know that I'm speaking to Dr. Thomas Heck, an independent scholar who is the originator of a proposal for the Holy Land Protectorate, an attempt to break the static situation that has existed there for so long and the ongoing violence that has continued. This also would be considered a nuclear-free zone, which would take some doing because there are enormous amount of nuclear weapons in Israel at this time. Nuclear weapons may not be introduced into the protectorate or maintained within its borders. The disposal there of radioactive waste materials shall be prohibited. That's Article 5. So that brings us into the area of implementation.
I'm intrigued that you have been, in fact, quoting, you know, from the Antarctic Treaty, because what I did in crafting what I call the Holy Land Protectorate Treaty was literally to take my Microsoft Word, grab the text of the Holy Land of the Antarctic Treaty, and do some word substitution.
Indeed, and I think it was a very good idea.
Well, I mean, I have to do some massaging, but still, the fact is that a novel, interesting, and workable diplomatic solution exists for handling from outside, you know, conflicting claims to national sovereignty in a given geographic area.
Well, we haven't seen diplomacy. I mean, speaking of our own country, speaking of the Middle East, here we have the Iraq study group come together after 16 years of war and say, well, maybe we should talk to the people in the area. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable the absence of diplomacy and how dialogue and diplomacy could have been conducted and could have avoided the death of millions of people now in the Middle East.
Well, I'm not sure I would use the word millions, at least in recent days, but maybe cumulatively. I do have some statistics that come from, you know, the Carter book, most recently published, about the casualties that have occurred since the Intifada. 3,982 Palestinians have been killed, of whom over 700 children. And on the Israeli side, they've lost 1,084, of whom 123 children. I mean, when you think of the grief that killing a child sows in the hearts of the family, you know, you just can't look the other way. This is the kind of thing that will you'll have a bitter harvest for a generation or two if you give anyone, you know, a reason to fight back.
This is the problem. These things don't go away easily. I mean, we still have the remnants of the Civil War in the United States, and it is not a quick departure from this type of bloodshed. And I do think an entirely new idea is called for here. No one is saying that there's some infallibility to such a proposal. The point is to get started on a program to end this almost eternal violence that's going on.
Right.
And to break that with a new idea, which, and maybe this is an idea whose time has come.
What I did with my HolyLandProtectorate.org site was basically to put up what I call an advocacy website. And since I put it up in 2003, there's been more than 14,500 hits. I haven't got a whole lot of responses, but I do have representative responses from friends of mine in the Jewish community, whom I reassure that this is not, you know, a threat to their lives or their existence. And I've also gotten response from some Arabs and some other people in the United States and Europe and you know, the thing is that it's simply outside the discursive terms that the principal parties to this conflict have drawn. In other words, every single person that has put up a proposal for peace in the Middle East, at least that I've seen, has been talking about either a binational state, you know, like one state with two populations, or you know, equal but parallel states, the so-called two-state solution. But they can't seem to get beyond the concept of statehood.
That's the problem, that we have framed our thinking in such a way that too becomes static. You mentioned here that the key to the success of this proposal will be creating a global consensus that the extra national status of the entire region, imposed by the community of nations based on the brilliant precedent of Antarctica, is the best option for securing justice and peace in the Holy Land. I mean, this is a new concept. This breaks the frame that we have had for all these years and says, let's take another look. This will not be easy. It requires moral imagination, nonviolent leadership, solidarity, courage, and collective will. Well, on with it.
Well, that's right, and I don't want to take credit for being quite as original as you would wish on me, because, after all I said was, well, look, we did it in 59 with Antarctica. Why can't we, you know, take a lesson from what we've already done?
Well, that's the necessary thing. If we look at philosophy over the last 2,000 years, basically the theme is that those who see relationships are wise. Those who are incapable of seeing relationships are unwise. That is a summary of 2,000 years of philosophy.
Oh. I hadn't heard that before, but I like it.
So I think that we have to go forward and get the feedback on this. Now, if you were seeing this going into action in 2007, what would be the mechanism that would initiate this this change?
All right. Well, the way I would see it happening is that all it takes is one influential country to gather the states that would be most likely crucial in bringing this about. You know, it is a kind of a strategy question, because most of us think when we talk about international agreements, of course we're talking about the United Nations. But in fact, the United Nations is not always it's a good forum, international forum for discussing things, but it's not necessarily the place where actions and important actions originate or are undertaken. That's usually done by the nation states themselves, as the Antarctic Treaty and as many other really important international treaties will attest. So what we need then basically is a group of, well, let's see, in my Holy Land Protectorate, I think about the EU, the European Union, and the Arab League, and the United States, and as many others as we can invite at that point.
Of course, and I think that this is what has to happen, is the discussion has to begin. And it may look different when it comes out into form as a reality, but the point is that the dialogue must begin on how this unique area of the world cannot be a center of perpetual war. And this is not acceptable.
Yeah, and it's also, it's such a wonderful cultural, archaeological, and religious, and pilgrimage site. It's far, far too valuable for the world to say we have no interest in this, that it's up to the parties, you know, that live there. That's very unimaginative. And, you know, we have so many precedents in law for, within countries, for having for instance, in the United States, we have something called the District of Columbia, which is not a state. Hello, you know. Exactly. And in Mexico, they have something called the Distrito Federal, you
That's
know,
right.
Mexico
yes.
DF. and is not a state. And there's lots of precedent for having areas that don't have statehood but still have people.
Well, I think creativity and imagination will supplant a lot of the old views. For some reason, we seem to be running out of time here, Dr. Heck. Do you have any final thought for us on this day and on this wonderful subject related to your website, holylandprotectorate.org? Any final thought for us?
Well, I think my final thought is that this is a holy season. Let's leap above the din of the current discussion to a new vision. Let's be good stewards collectively of a land that we all cherish. We can't let that particular sandbox be ruined by the players that are in it right now. And there's a lot of good rationale and discussion on my website, and I'd be happy if others would like to contribute.
Well, I think that's a wonderful thought, and that's why I thought it was so fitting to talk to you during this holiday season, because this is a time for reflection, a time to get out of a rut, the time to get out of the static kind of thinking that's gone on and led to more and more bloodshed. So I want to congratulate you for having an idea, and we'd love to see that idea implemented, and we'd like to see people participate in developing that idea by going to that website, holylandprotectorate.org. Dr. Heck, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.